If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTradio.live. Telling it as it is, Damian Richardson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the show on this Tuesday, May the 2nd, the news, of course, the Reserve Bank Board has met and interest rates have gone up for the 11th time in under 12 months. Things are starting to get tense in this studio. How much does that mean my mortgage is going to go up? I never really do the maths on that. I just wait and see what is taken out of my account and just, you know, sometimes I think, well, hopefully there's enough in my account to cover this increase in interest. But the government too have said they've announced that they're going to increase the tax on tobacco to raise $3.3 billion in revenue that they so desperately need. I'm sure all governments seem to need revenue, and they always hit tobacco. They always hit the vice, the addiction, the addict who's going to stay smoking no matter what. They're going to bemoan and they're going to complain. I've had a friend of mine, actually. I couldn't answer the phone. I was about to go to air, and he's a heavy smoker. I think he told me something like, I remember smoking back in the day. I think cigarettes were like $5.50 when I quit many, 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 many years ago, and now there's something like $50 a packet or something of 25s, or is that right? I don't know. I could be wrong, but joy, that's such an increase. Well, they're going to go up again. They're going to go up even much higher. And of course, Mark Butler, the health minister, is doing it for our health. He's doing it to our health, but he's buttering up the states as well, because he's telling them out of the $3.3 billion, they can look forward to $290 million in GST payments. So pay off the states and the territories. And, of course, have a swipe at the previous government while they're at it, saying, well, they increased tobacco by 125%, the excise on tobacco, throughout their terms in office. So everything all as well. And I think they're going to just ban some particular styles of vape coming in, because they're going to stop the next generation from smoking. Of course they are. And they said something too, something really sophisticated, like, well, the CPI is increasing so much that we'd hate to think that tobacco's wasn't increasing enough, so people would use that luxury instead of some other luxury that had gone up too much. You know, your milk's going up so much that it's driving you insane. So you think, I'm getting back on the fags. I'm getting back on the ciggies, just to deal with the fact that everything's going up. Yeah, I've had people stopping me in the supermarket. Actually, I'll be in the looking at the cheeses or something, and some nonna will grab me by the arm and say, "Oh my God, what's happening? The prices are just almost going up every day." And it's true. You can really notice that everything's gotten so much more expensive after COVID, as so many people said. But now we're living in that reality. Seems to be nothing we can necessarily do about it, but complain in the cheese aisle with the ladies that are in there shopping with me. Now, I'm going to talk to people too, talking about vice and using people's addiction against them. And let's be honest, people do it. That's what they do. You've got a weakness if you're addicted to something. You know, there's plenty of things that one could become addicted to. As a matter of fact, you could just become addicted to messaging someone on the internet. Who knows? There's all sorts of things that you just sort of get that hit when you get oh my God, I got a like on a message or something, or I got a like on a post I put up, or a retweet, as it were. But even more so than that, I think these revelations coming out again, diary release from Jeffrey Epstein's diary, and you see how they utilize the state, the deep state. It seems to be, hard to argue against the fact that the deep state used the sexual exploitation of young girls to blackmail politicians and businessmen and other administrators of the state into blackmail them to a point where they couldn't actually say no to whatever it was that the deep state wanted. I'm going to talk to David Thrussell about that in the first hour, and then I'm going to talk to Randall later on in the first hour about now how the sexualization of our children is also being used by the deep state. You know, we have these parliamentarians saying, you know, oh, this is just about equality and inclusion. But you see, this is rolling out across the Western world, including the fact that payments that the US are willing to make to third world countries in Africa comes with the caveat that they will implement policies that good for the LGBT community, so particularly focusing on trans. And this particular area, but the Drag Time Story Hour in Melbourne at the Oakley Library is something that I saw Senator Ralph Babbitt was at a meeting they had last Wednesday at the Monash Council, and he was talking the big talk that there's a lot of people, a lot of ratepayers inside that community that don't feel comfortable that the state is actually paying for the sexualisation of our children at the Oakley Library on the 19th of May. Now, since then, Babbitt has released a letter stating his position that he thinks he doesn't want anyone turning up to protest that event because the left are going to be there, the activists, Antifa, promoting the event, and it would be bad for the children if there was a fracas between the conservatives and Antifa. Wait, are you serious? What? So the sexualization of the children is not as bad as defending the children against that sexualization. What father ever said that? No father ever said that. A male proposition in that respect is to stand up for the children no matter what, come what may. If I have to be confronted by someone else who wants to do something to my children which I don't think is acceptable, then I stand up against it. Now, you may well argue, well, they're not your children. They're someone else's children. They're free to take them there. But why should my taxes and other people's taxes be paying for it, be part of that promotion? Who's going to stand up for those people when people that are calling themselves conservatives, and I think that's just a silly epithet ultimately, conservative, what does it mean? It means nothing. It just means you acquiesce ultimately to the deep state. I think what Babbitt's really frightened of is, so the Antifa are the people that are the minions, that they're the arm of government, you know. They are the paramilitary arm of the state. And I think Babbitt is frightened that the neo-Nazis are going to turn up and he will be given the deeming treatment, the Moira deeming treatment, and he'll be associated with the neo-Nazis because the neo-Nazis will turn up to shut down this Drag Queen Story Hour. It's going to be a really, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the proceeding weeks. At TNT Radio, we never go home. We are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
Stay updated on everything you need to know.
They keep me up to date.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, as we've already heard, the Reserve Bank of Australia board has resumed interest rate rises in its decision today, after a one-off pause last month. TNT Radio News producer Jeremy Beck has details on this story. Jeremy.
Thanks, Damien. The Reserve Bank of Australia board has decided to lift the cash rate target from 3.6 to 3.85%, marking the 11th increase in the space of a year. This has shocked borrowers and financial markets and caught most traders by surprise, as the market only priced in a 13% chance of rates rising ahead of the RBA's 2:30 p.m. announcement this afternoon. The latest rate increase will add around $78 a month, which is a fair bit every single month. It all adds up onto the repayments for a $500,000 home loan if passed on in full by the banks. Now, a customer owing $500,000 will have seen their repayments rise by around $1,058 a month since the RBA started hiking rates in May last year. That's where it all adds up there, Damien. Now, why did the Reserve Bank board decide to raise the interest rates today? Well, in his official statement, RBA Governor Philip Lowe says inflation in Australia has passed its peak, but at 7% is still too high and it will need some time yet before it is back in the target range. Given the importance of returning inflation to target within a reasonable timeframe, the board judged that a further increase in interest rates was warranted today. I think many others would not be at all happy about that, I'm sure, and you're not either, Damien.
No, well, there's some pain coming. There's some pain accruing, more pain piling on. Good. Jeremy, this, you know, tell me, is this the end of the pain, or do you think there's going to, in the future, there's going to be continue to be some rate rises.
Sorry to give you bad news, Damien, but in the statement, it says some further tightening of monetary policy may be required. Now, we know what further tightening means. It means raising the interest rates. And it may be required to ensure the inflation returns to target in a reasonable timeframe. But that will depend on how the economy and inflation evolve. The board will continue to pay close attention to developments in the global economy, trends in household spending, and the outlook for inflation and the labour market. The board remains resolute in its determination to return inflation to target and will do what is necessary to achieve that. So there's your answer. I don't think this is the last of the rate rises, Damien.
It's enough to make me want to go back to the Ciggies, Jeremy, but they've gone up as well, so there's no solution there. What else can the federal government possibly do to keep inflation down?
Well, they have some restriction, Damien, because the Reserve Bank of Australia is independent of government, so those decisions are made by the RBA. But the government still has control of policy in general in terms of the way our economy is going. Unfortunately, they're not doing too good, and the sorts of decisions they're doing will likely see inflation going up. We really need a productive economy, Damien, and we just simply don't. We've got red tape, green tape, all sorts of tape, and it's strangling our economy, unfortunately. We need to make some big changes.
Well, Jeremy Beck, on that peaked note, thank you so much for that news story, and you are indeed listening to TNT Radio.
Trevoy Morich on TNT Radio.
U.S. counterterror expert Scott Bennett. Basically, he's come out and said that Tucker Carlson had become a tremendous threat to the powers and principalities, institutions and agendas that seek an unenlightened, uninformed, semi-lobotomized, quasi-retarded population that do not question, do not research, do not analyze, but simply digest and follow instructions. So I thought he really hit on the head with that description of the populace in America, but, you know, in many other countries that exists as well to differing degrees. And that's always been one of the things that I've thought about the most in the past 20 years. Patrick McGoohan in The Prisoner, one of my favorite TV shows, cult TV classic from the 70s. You know, it's like that quote, we've met the enemy and the enemy is us. You know, when he unmasks Patrick McGoohan, who's supposed to be the villain, he takes off the mask and it's got the face of Patrick McGoohan.
Trevoy Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We all make choices. When it comes to alcohol, kids make choices whether to drink or not.
Bye, Dad.
Bye-bye.
Remember, I'm going to Alex's party tonight and sleeping over.
Hey, Em, have a seat for a second. Remind me about that party again.
Alex is just...
And adults make choices whether to talk about it. That's true of parents and every other trusted adult in a kid's life. Kids want to know our expectations when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. They want guidance and honest answers to their questions. And it makes a difference when the message is consistent and part of everyday conversations. So talk with your kids and help lead them on a positive path. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Today's news.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media.
Everyone else checking facts first.
Unfortunately, this is a real thing, and this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Free speech has a home
on TNT Radio.
Now, my first guest this hour, you have heard him before. He's been on the show a couple of times, and you may know him in a different capacity as the leader of the band Snog. But he's also a bit of an autodidact. He's taken himself out of the main, at the capital cities. He's bunkered away in Castlemaine, you know, amongst all his books. And anyway, he sent me an email this morning telling me that there's been some revelations come out from Jeffrey Epstein's diaries. And I thought this is something I haven't investigated anywhere near enough. It's probably what is controlling so many operatives within the deep state. And David Thrussell, I'd like to welcome you back to the show.
Thank you, Damien, and hello, listeners.
Now, what have you discovered that has brought to your attention? You brought to my attention.
What I've got, you know, I've got a friend in the States who is, he's not a mole. You couldn't describe him as a mole, but he is a little bit, he's got one foot in this world. And but he's a good guy. He's one of the good guys. And he sends me things, you know, just things that I think might be of interest, you know. And we've been having a conversation today and yesterday about these latest revelations about Jeffrey Epstein. If people don't know who Jeffrey Epstein is, he was the very powerful serial child abuser and friend and trafficker extraordinaire to the rich and powerful in the U.S., who reportedly took his own life in 2019 when he was locked up in jail in New York City on sex trafficking charges. So there's been revelations about there's been information before about his flight logs of his infamous plane called the Lolita Express and who flew on that plane. Some of that information has been public before, but just in the last day or two, it's become public. One of his calendars has become public through some legal action that's being pursued in the States. And his personal calendar makes very, very interesting reading. You may, if you follow the case at all, you may not be surprised to learn that there are some powerful and influential people who regularly appear in this excerpt from his calendar, including the current head of the CIA, who was a regular visitor to Jeffrey Epstein's building in New York City for what they called euphemistically evening meetings. So the current head of the CIA was booked in there, and a few other people as well, actually some quite interesting people. But one of the names that on there that I found most interesting was the name of Noam Chomsky, who some people will know his name. He's a very, well, he was a highly influential sort of left activist and linguist, and he was generally the person that the mainstream media for quite a few decades would go to if they wanted an opinion from the mainstream left. And lo and behold, Noam Chomsky and Jeffrey Epstein appear to be close friends, regularly visiting each other on Epstein's calendar.
So is this something that he should be wearing? Because I know Chomsky's come out, and first he said it's none of anybody's business, and then obviously there's more pressure on him, so he said, well, okay, yeah, I've met this guy, but... big deal, basically. Is it a case of innocent until proven guilty? I mean, there's no real evidence that he's done anything untoward, is there?
You're quite correct in pointing that out. There's no specific evidence of any wrongdoing. There is, however, a lingering suspicion because the meetings are frequent and they do occur years after Jeffrey Epstein has very publicly been imprisoned briefly as a underage sex trafficker. So Epstein was jailed briefly for that crime, very strangely briefly. So that all these meetings have occurred in the time after that occurred, and you'd have to. I understand your point. It's a very good one. Innocent until proven guilty. Absolutely. But it does, you know, when you meet with somebody who has clearly that reputation and you meet with them repeatedly in the years afterwards, I do think it looks questionable.
So Epstein was jailed around 2006, for pedophilia, ultimately, trafficking in underage girls. But then he's released. Then people meet him again.
And he's released under very interesting circumstances, actually. The guy who was the district attorney that signed off on his plea deal that got him released early went on to be, I think his name was Alex Azar or something like this. He went on to have a position in the Trump administration. And when he was asked at his confirmation hearing in front of Congress why he had been so lenient on Jeffrey Epstein, he actually replied under oath, this fellow, that he had been told that Epstein was had the fingerprints of the intelligence agencies on him and that he had been told that Epstein was above his pay grade.
Wow. Okay. Yep.
In black and white, said it to Congress.
Does anyone follow up on that? You say that to Congress. Is there any follow up, or is that just like a warning to everyone that you don't follow up on it?
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, haven't you? Yes. I mean, I think that's right. That's like a, it's like sending up a flare saying, stay away from this, okay, if you know what's good for you. Because what we're looking here, I mean, we can go into these details, and I think the details are interesting, and I think they're
Please do.
Worthwhile. I mean, I honestly, for decades, I've been dubious myself about Noam Chomsky because, you know, he was promoted for decades now. He's kind of past his use-by date now, but he was promoted in the media for decades as this sort of voice of dissent, this voice of the opposition, you know, in the media, you know. But I noticed for years that Chomsky, you know, I mean, his analysis is good in some ways, but he would only go so far, and he was actually the very sort of epitome of what you would describe as a gatekeeper. He would go so far, but then he would absolutely come to a terrific halt, you know, and he, for example, he very publicly and very loudly said that there were no questions to be asked about 9/11, and if you had any questions to ask about 9/11, you're a lunatic. He also said the same thing about the Kennedy assassination. He also said recently, I'm told, I haven't seen this, but I'm told that he said that people who anti-vaxxers should be jailed, for example. So I would classify Chomsky as kind of the perfect example of a kind of gatekeeper, somebody who attracts an audience and does that quite successfully and then directs that audience in a particular direction and makes sure they stay away from certain, you know, radioactive topics, you know. And I think all these personalities which are coming out in this information, it's all very interesting, but I also think that it's useful to pull back a bit and try and look at the big picture, you know. And I would suggest the big picture is, you know, this is a moment where the curtain gets pulled back a little bit and we can sort of see behind the scenes a bit, I would say, you know. And what we're seeing, I would suggest, in this big picture is this is how our political realm, our media realm, our academic realm, this is partially how those realms are absolutely controlled through blackmail. I mean, that's what Jeffrey Epstein was running. He was running an extremely well-funded blackmail operation. You know, he collected, and this has come out in trial, it's admitted publicly, he collected thousands of photographs and videos of powerful people in compromising positions. We still don't know the full list of those powerful people. That information exists, but it has been deemed that it shouldn't be released to the public. Okay, but we do know that he collected thousands of videos, thousands of photographs of compromising material on powerful people.
It's almost like we found out about Prince Andrew, didn't we? It's almost like you say, there's like you're allowed to find out about Prince Andrew because he's an accepted aristocrat that the old order would have gone after.
He looks like a fall guy to me, to be honest.
Yeah. You know? Yeah,
let's dangle Prince Andrew out in public for, you know, something salacious, for some scandal, to actually distract. This is essentially what I'm saying, to distract from this bigger picture, which is, and that bigger picture is, I would suggest, that actually our power structures are so deeply corrupt that we can't, average folk like us can't imagine the level of corruption that's going on. And I think moments like this, as I said, are a little peek behind the curtain, you know, where we can see, oh, there's a real stench behind there.
I would suggest this
works on every level of our political structures. I would be surprised, I'm speculating here, but I would be very surprised if operations like Jeffrey Epstein weren't happening in Australia and indeed weren't even happening in Victoria.
So the suggestion is, too, that he worked very closely with Ehud Barak, the former Prime Minister of Israel, to create a honeypot. So basically the girls are used as a honeypot to compromise people, particularly men, and not just men, though, in positions of authority. So they would do the bidding of Mossad, ultimately. That's inflammatory, isn't it? The danger of talking about that, of course, is you get accused of being anti-Semitic.
Of course, you know, and it's a great tragedy that there are all sorts of topics that we cannot really discuss openly, you know, because we know that they're the third rail. We trip over them, and you know, we get nuked. I mean, you know, there's a lot of evidence that what we're seeing here is actually a cooperative enterprise between elements of U.S. intelligence, CIA, FBI, Mossad, and organized crime, the mafia. In fact, I would recommend to people who are listening, who are interested, if they want more information about this, there's actually an incredible book out at the moment which is not getting any media coverage at all, really, as far as I know. It's called One Nation Under Black Veil. It's written by a journalist called Whitney Webb, a female journalist, Whitney Webb. Webb is spelt with two B's at the end. It's a massive tome. This actually comes in volumes 1 and 2. It's about 950 pages of damning deep research. I highly recommend the book, One Nation Under Blackmail. And the picture that Whitney Webb paints, you know, it begins at least at the Second World War, you know, and these are blackmail operations to compromise people in positions of power that have been going on at least since the Second World War. So we're talking about a long-term deep operation. This is not a, you know, flash-by-night kind of flash-in-the-pan kind of thing at all. This is a long-term, deep operation to control our power structures. Yeah.
We're talking to David Thrussell about, well, ultimately many nations under blackmail. We're just going to go to news and we'll be straight back to continue the conversation. You're listening to TNT Radio.
What a news day this is turning out to be.
Wait till you hear this.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylant here with your TNT headlines. Despite trying its best to sink Russia's energy sector with a flood of sanctions, it's been revealed the West has still been buying Russian oil, albeit through third countries. Another bank, the third in as many months, has collapsed in America. China's called for developing nations to have more of a say at the UN Security Council. And Russia has carried out a wave of fresh airstrikes on Ukraine, which is said to have delivered a huge blow to Kyiv's planned counter-offensive.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play, today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Talking to David Thrussell about the recent revelations from the Epstein diary, the political commentator Vox Day has been blogging about this very issue, David, and he's said things like, well, every single member of the international elite is part of this wicked system to a greater or lesser extent. And he also says, you know, you can forget about Marxism or capitalism and forget about every secular attempt to explain what cannot be explained by purely materialistic paradigms. This is the way the world actually works. And he talks about, it's almost like reading Dostoevsky's Demons. He talks about the demons, which are in control of the flesh and the soul, and that Christians in Russia and secularists in China are determined to see it destroyed. Can you
look,
talk
about
that?
It's an interesting realm, isn't it? You know, my friend who I mentioned earlier on in the States, who actually worked for Harvey Weinstein for quite a few years, and he went to Bard University, which is involved in these revelations. The head of Bard University, while my friend was there, is one of these people that frequently appears in Epstein's calendar. He sent me something very interesting. He sent me an article from 1985 about one of the people deeply involved in this Epstein network, a guy called Leslie Wexner, who actually owned Victoria's Secret, this very big lingerie company, you know. This is a sort of biographical article about Leslie Wexner from 1985, where Wexner talks about the demon in his life, the demon that's with him when he wakes up and is with him every day, that pushes him on further and further to buy more companies, to have more mergers and acquisitions, and to be an aggressive businessman, a competitive businessman. He openly talks about it, and he uses the term demon, that he has a demon on his back every single day. And I found that very interesting. And I thought that's a, it's, as my friend in the States said, you should listen to people when they tell you who they are. You know, when they tell you what makes them tick and what makes them what they are, you should generally listen to them. You know, so this fellow, Wexner, is the guy, it appears he's the guy who funded Jeffrey Epstein. So he's higher up the food chain than Epstein ever was, you know. And Leslie Wexner's still around, you know. And he, there he is in black and white in 1985, a long, long time ago, openly, publicly saying that he is motivated and driven by a demon.
So
make of that what you will.
Yeah, well, there's so many questions, of course, so little time, so many questions. Epstein's suicide on the 10th of August 2019 in his cell, you know, there's a lot of speculation about whether he was, you know, suicided or whether he actually did it himself.
I think that speculation is absolutely warranted. If you have a very high-value asset, a high-value prisoner in a maximum security installation who is notorious internationally, and they all of a sudden come to harm, it doesn't matter who they are, that's a situation that warrants suspicion, I would suggest. It's entirely justified to, you know, raise an eyebrow about that. And then when you mix that with the revelations that we heard, you know, and these were all very mainstream revelations, but the problem with the mainstream press, of course, is that they never join any dots, you know. But we heard in the mainstream these revelations that all the security guards for his floor happened to be asleep at the time. The security cameras happened to fail just for that hour. And all these kind of things. You join all those dots together and you get a highly suspicious situation, you know, that I think, you know, only the most terminally naive person would think that there wasn't some kind of smoke there that would was worth investigating, you know.
Yeah,
so
the
I
mainstream
don't know what happened, but I'm highly suspicious.
The mainstream are paid not to join those dots together, ultimately, to run cover
gig,
for whatever's going on. Yeah, that's their gig, and we've seen that firsthand. But also his wife or his partner, Ghislaine Maxwell, has since gone to jail. The guy owned an island in the Caribbean, Epstein Island, which these people used to go to have this nefarious activities with these underage girls. This is on record, yet we don't find out about anyone that went to that island.
No,
but we're still expected to pay our taxes.
you're quite right. It's an extraordinary situation, isn't it? So that information does exist, but it is kept from the public because it is seen that the public, you know, is not adult enough to have that information, or can't be trusted with that information, or that the information is simply too scandalous and it will rupture what is known euphemistically as the public trust. It will rupture the public's trust in figures of authority, you know. I mean, there have been some snippets of information that have come out about some of Jeffrey Epstein's flight logs, because he had a private jet and they would fly to his island where they would commit these crimes against young women and crimes against children. And, you know, some of that information has leaked its way out rather reluctantly to the public, but you won't hear about it in the mainstream. But years back, the Miami Herald, which is actually a reasonably mainstream newspaper in Miami, obviously in Florida, did pursue this information. So it has been made public. But, you know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the ABC, the Guardian, whoever, they're never going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. But it did come out in the Miami Herald, a perfectly legitimate mainstream publication that, for example, I've seen reproductions from the Miami Herald of Epstein's flight logs. Bill Clinton is on there at least 26 times, and that's just on the flight logs that have been released, and that's not all of them, obviously, you know, but Bill Clinton is on there 26 times, which I think would paint, you know, Bill as definitely deserving frequent flyer points to Epstein Island. Hillary is even on there 6 times. And all sorts of celebrities and, you know, big-name public figures are on those flight logs, all sorts of people.
And yet we've got Trump being arraigned for his alleged sexual indiscretions with an ex porn star.
I take your point there that there's an imbalance there. I mean, I agree with you. I also think there's something fundamental there, which is about distraction. This information, that the people who used Epstein's revolting services are too powerful. They have too much sway. Their methods and their names cannot be revealed to the public, you know. I mean, this is the power structure that we have. This is how power works, you know. I'm sure there are major political figures much closer to home where we are who are blackmailed into performing the actions that they perform. It would not surprise me in the slightest to eventually find out, or, you know, we've even heard whispers about these things, of course, you know, but, you know, to know that there are major political figures here and major media figures here, major celebrities, major figures in academia who are blackmailed into behaving the way that they behave and, you know, to green lighting the things that they green light.
It's a spiritual battle. That's what people keep talking about. And ultimately, the flesh is weak and could well easily bring us all unstuck in the end, couldn't it, David?
I so much agree. And I also think that, you know, I love the expression that sunlight is the best disinfectant, you know, because this is the stuff that hides in darkness. This is the fundamental, profound corruption that hides underneath the surface. And I'm just going to say it straightforwardly. The mainstream media, who I am no friend of whatsoever, their job is to hide this stuff, okay? Their job is to distract the public, to cow the public, to misdirect them so that they don't join these dots, you know? And these are the dots that should be joined so that this behavior can be disinfected by sunlight.
David Thrussell, thanks so much for bringing this scummy infestation into the disinfecting power of the sunlight. No, I appreciate it. Thanks for coming back on the show.
My pleasure, mate.
You're listening to TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Like the socially awkward pre-adolescents that they are, the left has carried the joke one step too far. Remember that kid when everybody'd be joking around that would try to get in on the action and say something that was so random, so bizarre, everybody just looked at him as like, yeah. Well, that's what the left has done now with transableism. What is transableism, you ask? It's perfectly healthy people blinding and mutilating themselves because they identify as disabled. You can't criticize transabled without simultaneously criticizing transgenderism. Because after all, what's the difference between blinding yourself and whacking off your tallywhacker? From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Controversy has dogged Black Lives Matter finances, Patrice Cullors, and other board members. Fiscal 2020 tax filings of the Black Lives Matter Foundation's finances show that expenses of $2,167,894 went to the Bowers Consulting Firm, which is owned by current board member Shalamaya Bowers. Los Angeles-based Trap Heels LLC, owned by Damon Turner, received $969,459 for live production, design, and media. Turner, a rapper and artist, is the father of Cullors' son. The BLM Foundation also paid $840,993 to Cullors Protection LLC, a company owned by Patrice Cullors' brother, Paul, and established in July 2020. In an interview to MSNBC to clear her name, Cullors said that BLM was unprepared for the rush of donations and complained that her mistakes were being weaponized against her. According to the tax filings, the Black Lives Matter Foundation still has more than $50 million in donations, and $32 million of that was invested in the stock market.
Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Now, my next guest is also been a regular on the show. He was on the show Thursday, and he's a former advertising executive. It is Randall. And last Thursday, he was talking to us about a meeting that took place on the Wednesday evening at Monash Council, because there's residents that were quite disappointed in their council to be funding a drag queen story hour at the Oakley Library, which is makes up part of the municipality, on the 19th of May at 10:30. And Senator Ralph Babbitt was there lending his support to the people that were against the drag time story hour, but he seems to have changed his mind. Randall, welcome back to the show.
G'day, Jomo. Good to be here. Thanks, mate.
Yeah, so what's happened? What's happened with the good senator? He's written a letter basically saying that he doesn't want anybody to turn up at the story hour on the 19th at the Oakley Library because there will be like left-wing radicals is basically what he's saying there to insist that the story time goes ahead. And he would hate to, for the children to be affected by some altercation between conservatives and radicals.
That's right. Look, it was great to see Ralph Babbitt turn up the other night on Wednesday night. That was very heartening, and it was very supportive. But yet now we see this letter that was published saying that, look, he's concerned about the children there. He felt that, extreme groups are intending to protest at the venue and that it's concerning to him, and he says, and he alleges other people that have been in touch that the children are protected, of course, but are not traumatised by any conflict or a clash between conservative, if you will, he calls them conservative parents, etc., who are not for this drag story time, and the more extreme left who may be there at the time to promote this story time. So he's concerned about the effects on the children, and he's requesting that those who are considering turning up from the more conservative end maybe think twice about that and maybe join him in continuing to petition councils and, try and have our voices heard in that particular way yet again and continue that vein and maybe look at other ways of pushing back against this. I've got a concern with that, Damo.
Yes, I thought you might have. Do you want me to ask you the question or do you want to just roll on with that concern?
Well, the concern is simply that, look, we've tried all of these all of these alternative processes, these processes that are put in place for us to be able to discuss this issue, and it is an issue of drag performers and little children aged 1 to 6 in these drag story times discuss these particular issues that we have surrounding this particular situation with councillors and with council in the most, most orthodox way. The processes are in place for us to, do that supposedly, but yet it doesn't seem to be happening. It doesn't seem to be happening in the sense that councils aren't listening to the concerns of their constituents, and that's why we see a situation that occurred the other Wednesday, just several days ago, about a week ago, down there at the Monash Council, where concerned residents, and I'm talking about regular, normal, concerned parents and ratepayers, turning up to voice their concerns with council, and the council clearly not listening. Okay, now there's been a process in place here, Damo. There's been letters, emails, phone calls to the council, to the library involved over preceding weeks, at least 3 to 4 weeks prior to this event, if not more. Now, those letters have been dismissed by council. I myself have received responses back from council, and it's all been about pro the event, of course, pro the position, pro the drag performers working with 1 to 6 year olds, and this is a necessarily inclusive thing that's happening. It's about diversity. It's about inclusion of minority group. We're getting the same story back from council. Parents, concerned ratepayers, turned up at the meeting, voiced their concerns firmly, loudly, frustrated with the fact that council is not listening, and now council still is not listening, pressing forward regardless. And we have a situation now on May 19th where it wouldn't surprise me, Dana, in the slightest, if parents turned up there and concerned ratepayers turned up, because they're not being heard, Damo, right?
Mm. No. Well, this sort of representation is the problem, isn't it, ultimately, because it's the people versus the deep state. So now Babbitt's points may be well-meaning at best, but ultimately he's taken the position of the deep state. So ultimately the people get no representation. It's almost like he's, despite his protestations, that he's not a careerist politician, that he was in sales and now he's come to politics. During the federal election, he wants to maintain his position with inside the apparatus itself more than seem to be some disruptive influence standing up to the apparatus and, God forbid, making a real name for himself.
Yes, yes. Look, we see this with other politicians who, you know, succumb to the narrative by ways and degrees, I suppose. You know, I'm not saying that Ralph Babbitt is lost at sea completely, but maybe there's been some pressure applied, Damo. I'm not quite sure, you know, but it seems to be a bit of an unusual backflip. And, you know, he seemed to be quite staunch in his position last week. And now we see this, you know, and it's just got me scratching my head, you know, and I think many of your listeners would feel the same way about it if they're across this particular situation with Babbitt.
I'm worried. I'm concerned. I wonder if you think this might be true. I reckon Babbitt's got something else on his mind too, politically, and I reckon he's worried of getting the Moira Deeming treatment. So we saw with the, Let Women Speak protest, which you saw as well last month, and Moira Deeming was there and the Nazis turned up, and that association was made by the media industrial complex, which supports, obviously, the regime. And I reckon maybe Babbitt's frightened that will be the case for him too. So
wouldn't be surprised. There's a great example there with Moira just recently. David, you know, is playing maybe pressured to turn around and play ball somewhat. Just seems surprising to me, but you know, look, these guys are cutting a new career, you know, Moira's the same, and Babbitt's just kind of new in the box. So who knows, mate? Yeah, quite possible.
So, therefore, the people ultimately don't get any representation except for systems apparatchiks, and which is no representation at all, because it's actually the battle is against the deep state itself, which is funding the whole enterprise. You know, when I ran for parliament, the VEC, the Victorian Electoral Commission workers, were coming out in lanyards in the rainbow colours, supporting all of this, what's happening now with drag queen story time. So how can people begin to fight back when the apparatus itself has been weaponized by the state, is actually part of the state?
Yes, yes, and they're all wanting the popular vote, inverted commas, you know, and, you know, trying to, you know, comply with that. It is extremely frustrating, you know, as a parent, you know, as a ratepayer, to see this abuse of not just public funds to run this kind of event, but the fact that there seems to be this overarching, I guess, okayness, you know, this confirmation that this is kind of acceptable in some particular way, and council, who works hand in hand in the community with us, with ratepayers and so forth, supposed to be some kind of have some kind of moral compass here, but clearly not. I mean, they're complying with this desire to have drag performers exposed and involved with young children and read quite dubious texts from the LGB manual to these young kids. I mean, why don't? Why is this necessary? It is not necessary. No? And some reason, some excuse provided to us that this is about diversity and inclusion of some minority group. Mate, they are not a minority group. They are just performers. As we discussed the other night, you know, they are just performers. They're not a minority group. You know, so
Senator, It's an attack on the nuclear family, isn't it, ultimately?
Well, it is. It is. It's an assault on the family, and it's coming from all quarters, as I'm sure your listeners would agree. You know, it's coming from all quarters, and this is just another example. I mean, they've weaponized. Can I say they've weaponized drag queens and drag performers? And, you know, I'll just say that I have nothing against drag performers as adult entertainment. Nothing against that whatsoever. That's fine, okay? But when it comes to young kids, I'm sure your viewers would agree, there's an issue here, right? There is a big issue about the morality, the ethics, the appropriateness of drag performers, adult entertainment, and I don't care whether they're up on stage, twerking, doing whatever, in the club, that's fine, doing their stuff, right, okay, but and whether they do a watered-down version or they do a drag light version around little kids, okay, which is going to be the case, it doesn't matter. It's not the point, okay, the point, and it doesn't matter that it's about parents who are opting into this and taking their kids along to this type of stuff. And I would ask the question about parents. I mean, what kind of parents would do that? But it's about the appropriateness of drag performers per se. Today, drag performers, tomorrow, what next? Okay? So, you know, I mean, it comes to a point where I think people need to say, no, we've had enough. The councils are not listening. Why aren't they listening? They should be listening to their constituents, but they don't seem to care. And this is where the frustration comes from. And Babbitt talking about peel back, take it easy, you know, sit back, you know, just keep writing your petitions, keep doing your stuff. I mean, you may recall, Damo, I said to you last week that a petition was drawn up, okay, and names were gathered from the municipality, and that was submitted on time via process to council. Was it on the agenda? No, it wasn't. Okay, wasn't it included on the agenda? And I would say, and we all ask the question, why the stuff not? Wasn't it included in the agenda? It should have been, but it wasn't. Because of course,
and why wasn't it? What did the council say? They said they hadn't received it, didn't they?
Well, that is complete crap because it was submitted on time. And I can confirm that it was submitted on time. Not that I was personally responsible for submitting it, but I know those that were, and they followed the procedure. So it was in, but it wasn't. It wasn't going to be on the agenda at all, and it wasn't a topic for discussion. So
Ralph was there, and he saw that reality, yet he still says in this letter, let's continue to stay within the system that means you always lose and continue to petition councillors.
Yes, that's right.
It's a waste of time. Continue to petition councillors like we petitioned Babbitt probably to turn up in the first place, and that this is the representation you get from people within the system itself.
Yeah, it's very disappointing. I mean, Babbitt himself said, I do ask, however, that you continue to petition the council and all our electoral members to cease the waste of taxpayer funds on programs which we all believe to be outside of their remit. So really it's taking the soft line, the soft approach, the approach that we've taken in the past, trying to...
We seem to have lost Randall there. I think some really important points he's making too. It says, Babbitt says here too, it is important that we continue to advocate for the rights of children and to do so in a way that respects the children we seek to protect. So as I was saying in my editorial, ultimately what Babbitt is saying is that the act of protecting the children from this grotesque sexualization is going to be more disruptive to the children than the sexualization of the children themselves. It just the mind boggles at what resolution ratepayers can ever even think to hope they're going to get. I mean, Babbitt says right at the end of his letter too that we'll be hosting their own conservative story time event in the near future, as if that's some sort of resolution to the issue. Will that be supported by the money of the people, the ratepayers? in the city of Monash. I doubt it. Just like when there was a COVID inquiry I saw in Queensland by parliamentarians sitting in a COVID inquiry, they had to sit outside of the parliament in offices somewhere in Queensland, not as part of the federal parliamentarians like Malcolm Roberts, et cetera. Craig Kelly, when he was still a parliamentarian, was part of it as well. And they sat outside in their own private offices, but not supported by the state. So what representation do we get, even from the people that say they will represent us? It seems like the whole thing has been set up to fail right from the beginning, and it's disappointing that there'll be no one to take the courage. And ultimately, I think it's the courage that's going to have to come from a male, a masculine figure, because this is ultimately the feminization of the state and the inability for men now of courage and conviction to stand up to that feminization. Well, we'll continue to do it as much as we can here, of course, on the Damien Richardson Show on TNT Radio.